From the land to Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 17th day of June, 2021. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Matt Bennett. He's at agmarket.net, and we'll take up the weather forecast with Mike Tenorum from T-Storm Weather in Chicago. Along the way, we'll talk a little bit about the news of the day as it relates to the Biden administration, the RFS, electric vehicles, the budget, and SREs, small refinery exemptions. It all happens on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
The July corn for the day finished the limit lower, down 40 cents at $6.33 a bushel. September at 548.5, also down 40, and December 40 lower. That's the new crop at $5.32.5 a bushel. July soybeans $13.29¾, $1.18¾ lower. August down $1.07 at 120, or rather at 12.95. And the November at $12.52¾, 90½ cents lower. Bean meal futures down $17.70 at $361.50 per ton. Bean oil at $56.57, down $5.50. Wheat futures were down 23¾ cents in the lead July. The harvest month for the soft red at $6.39 on its settlement price. The hard red there at $5.85¼, down 25¼. And the spring finished the September contract at $7.55¼, down 11¼ cents. Live cattle futures off $3.82½ at $121.10. Feeders at $157.40, down 30 cents. And lean hogs for the day, $4.50 lower at $107.20. Crude oil down $1.10 a barrel at $71.04. Diesel fuel at $2.06¾, down 3¾. And gasoline on the RBOB down 2¾. At $2.13¼ per gallon, and ethanol futures were unchanged at $2.46 a gallon for the afternoon. NASDAQ is at 14,170. That's 197 points higher. The Dow is down 227 at 33,679. Matt Bennett now joins us from agmarket.net. Good afternoon to you, Matt. It was a really ugly day in Chicago. What happened?
Yeah, I think it's a variety of things. I mean, obviously, some of these weather forecasts have spooked some of the traders, but at the same time, you know, the verification hasn't been that great in a lot of places. There hadn't actually been a lot of total rainfall. Some of the forecasts are calling for 2, 3, 4 inches of rain, but, you know, sometimes it's hard to come up with that kind of moisture whenever you're as dry as what we are. So you got to look towards other things. And I think, you know, one of the main things I'm looking towards is, you know, the Biden administration talking about, you know, potentially issuing a bunch of waivers for biofuel blending companies to get a little bit of relief. And I think that that's definitely got people spooked. It's got them worried that our usage or demand may not quite be what we thought it was going to be. And I feel like the funds are kind of liquidating before you get to that June 30th report.
Any chance that this thing will recover some?
You know, when a market has the chance to take off and go to all-time highs, lots of times you'll see extreme swings like we're currently witnessing. So I do think it could recover, but at the same time, let's be cognizant of what price levels we're looking at. I know we've talked about this a couple times when the market fell back. You know, you're still looking at over $5 corn out of the field for everyone pretty much that's listening to this, and, you know, 12, 12.50 out of the field soybeans. So, you know, if you do get those rains and the market stabilizes somewhat, those are some awfully good profit margins. And so we don't want to lose sight of that. But can we rally back to make new highs? I think we can. If we don't get the rainfall, there's no question in my mind you could be looking at a really strong rally.
Yeah, so this is something we'll know in the next, 5 days.
I think it's something that we'll get a really good handle on soon. I mean, I think that if you don't have good weather heading into pollination, there's no doubt, you know, that you're going to be able to take off and move this market sharply higher. If you do have at least decent weather as we get closer to the end of the month, and then you tack on a couple 3 million acres, it's going to be a bit of an uphill climb to make new highs.
How concerning are the limit down moves in the marketplace for you?
You know, it's concerning, but at the same time, you know, again, I feel like we got to remember how much we've already rallied. You know, we're at levels we haven't seen in several years. So, you know, being able to be in a situation where we go down 40 and we're still looking at, you know, $5 corn out of the field for this fall, that's a pretty nice problem to have. So, you know, we got to keep everything in perspective as much as what we possibly can. The hard thing for all of us, including you, including me, is that, you know, we haven't got the rain yet. So we're not sitting in the situation where we know exactly what our production is going to be or know that we've got a good crop coming on. I mean, we all feel pretty good about it, but we certainly need to get one of those good drenching rains. I think we'd all feel a lot better about moving our sales forward.
Can we talk about production just a little bit? I would dare to venture that you have a good crop. Part of East Central Illinois going to the east through the Corn Belt is a good crop. Central Illinois, pretty decent crop in the northwestern part of the state. If they get the rainfall, they'll probably be fine. Emerson Nafziger writes that if we can get the rainfall normal the rest of the way out, even the crop that's been rolling, especially the smaller it is, certainly should be okay. However, I'm wondering what you're hearing about the northwestern part of Iowa, the southwestern part of Minnesota, and the southeastern part of North Dakota, that kind of four-state area there, including South Dakota, and how bad conditions really have been and whether they can recover, in your opinion, and the agronomist that you've been talking to about the condition of the corn crop, particularly there.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that part of the world is definitely in dire straits. We actually have an office in Western Iowa, and those guys farm and gals, you know, and they're telling us that if they don't get decent rain here in the next week, it's going to be curtains for some of their crops. So you got to be really cautious as to assume that one rain is going to make things better. I mean, they need a steady dose of rain. If you look at the top soil moisture deficit, if you look at the drought monitor, it all is showing that it's going to be a major yield reduction in that part of the world once again after Iowa took it on the chin last year. So, you know, I guess my personal standpoint here is that most of the meteorologists I follow say that the Western Corn Belt is the biggest risk to have some sort of a drought situation. And so, you know, if that's the case, then, you know, there's no doubt that that's the situation they're in right now. If they don't break out of it here really quickly, it's going to be a major issue.
What does your intuition tell you about overnight and tomorrow's trade?
I've got to think there's going to be some recovery, but in all honesty, Todd, nothing would surprise me. You know, whenever you look at some of these wild swings, I mean, obviously the dollar's strong. The dollar's providing some major headwinds for commodities. At this stage of the game, I don't think that we're going to take and test our expanded limits. But at the same time, I don't think we should be surprised by anything.
Hey, thank you.
Hey, thanks, Todd.
Matt Bennett is with AgMarket.net. Joined us on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. You can hear it again if you'd like on our website at willag.org, willag.org. There you'll find our other agricultural programming as well, including Commodity Week. We'll record that this afternoon. Should be posted this evening, maybe a bit later than usual. Normally, I try to get it up by about 6 o'clock. I don't think I'll make that tonight, but you'll find Commodity Week there tonight, and you can listen to it, or you can wait until tomorrow afternoon and hear most of it in this program or this hour on our home station. And many of these radio stations will carry it over the weekend. Commodity Week is our weekly look at what happened in the world of the agricultural trade. And we'll have a lot to talk about this afternoon and look forward into tomorrow, I think, a little bit, though that's very difficult to do on a Thursday evening. So we'll try to be careful about what we discuss there, but still talk a great deal about how things went down today and what it looks like going forward across the United States and for crop conditions here. In today's agricultural news, let's start with the RFS and the Biden administration. There have been rumors coming out of EPA and the administration of possible considerations of exempting oil refiners from the blending obligations in the renewable fuel standard. Iowa Representative Cindy Axne, a Democrat, joined with a bicameral group that's both Senate and House in her party in sending a letter to EPA Administrator Michael Regan and to the White House saying any such plan would be catastrophic to the biofuels industry and to the environment. Congresswoman Axne says that the letter they sent has a strong message that they will not stand by and see the RFS weakened.
I helped lead a letter of 16 House and Senate Democrats, a group that includes both agriculture committee chairs from the Senate chamber and the House chamber, and local Democrats like myself and Sherry Bustos of Illinois and Angie Craig of Minnesota, those of us from the heartland who know how important this is. And we wrote to the EPA and to the White House and sent a very strong message that you must reject any policy that would weaken the RFS.
President Biden made clear in his campaign that he would be supportive of the RFS. These new reports would be a complete about-face to those campaign promises. Axne feels that this information is not coming from the president and that he's still committed to the RFS and biofuels and American farmers. She adds that somebody inside a chain of information is getting ahead of themselves. The letter, she says, is meant to draw attention to the president's prior comments. Axne feels that having the support of both agricultural committee leaders, they can drive that point home.
I mean, if our two agriculture committee chairs are writing and saying, you've got to make sure we uphold this, I would hope that they would listen. Those are the folks who have been elected by their peers to those positions because of their concern and desire to support our farms across this country and our farming industries.
The Iowa representative says the big oil companies have been supported by government policy for decades and that it's taxpayers who get stuck with bills whenever they have a spill or another environmental situation. She adds that it's time to grow support and add opportunity in rural America. Now, on that note, and as it's related to the RFS and the Biden administration, the Renewable Fuels Association's Jeff Cooper says the issue's also about the president's budget request that favors electric over biofuel vehicles by more than 10 to 1.
We ought to be investing in biofuels and getting higher blends of ethanol out there right alongside the investments you're making in electric vehicles. We're not saying don't invest in electrification. We're just saying there needs to be some fairness and equity in how these dollars are being divided up. Again, if the goal in all of this investment is to reduce carbon emissions.
Clearly, Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley agrees with that sentiment and says that the biofuel industry has proven ethanol reduces greenhouse gas emissions from motor fuel by almost half, but goes on to complain that the president simply is banking on electric vehicles that rely on fossil fuels for electricity.
This same administration has proposed hundreds of billions of dollars in subsidies for electric vehicles, but failed to include any support for biofuels infrastructure, which play a vital role in our nation's transportation sector, as well as our efforts to reduce greenhouse gases.
Senator Grassley from Iowa says President Biden now has a big decision to face. He can lower greenhouse gases with biofuels, or side with big oil and destroy biofuel and corn demand by granting waivers, the way he says the Trump and Obama EPAs did. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Let's check in on the weather forecast now with Mike Tenura, T-Storm Weather in Chicago. Mike, thank you for being with us. In Chicago, the trade for corn, soybeans has been decidedly downward trending. Then I think on ideas that rainfall is going to come across the Midwest. And it's an important time of year. We're a few weeks out from pollination, but the corn plant really needs at this point, given the amount of rainfall in a large part of the western part of the Corn Belt, a good drink. What do you see over the next couple of weeks?
Well, there are some rains on the way, and those certainly are needed, as you noted. The interesting thing is that if we have 2 inches of rain across the seven-state Corn Belt through the end of the month, we'd still end up being the number 12 driest of the last 126 years in the U.S. Corn Belt. And the only year that would have been drier than that in the modern era that started in 1960 would have been the drought in 2012. That gives you some idea of what's been going on just in the month of June. And we have our proprietary data that we always like to talk about, and certainly that our subscribers have access to when they need it. But just think about this for a moment, Tom. 79%, 61%, and 40% of U.S. corn production was drier than normal over the last 14, 30, and 90 days. So 79, 61, and 40. On the same day in 2012, the numbers were 73%, 61%, and 41%, almost identical to where we sit at this moment in time. And I know a lot of producers in Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio hear something like this, and they think that it doesn't really make a lot of sense because they've been getting some decent rains. Well, everybody up to the Northwest has not been getting good rains. Most of Iowa, most of Minnesota, most of Nebraska, most of the Dakotas, a lot of Wisconsin, far northern Illinois, all these areas are what's accounting for these unusual statistics. Now, we know what happened in 2012. We obviously had one of the worst growing seasons on record. At this point in time, things do look better in the near term because, again, we do have storms coming up tonight, some more this weekend, some more next week. And that's all happening because three cool fronts are going to move through. And those are also going to turn temperatures a lot cooler than they have been. A lot of areas have been very hot in recent days and even in recent weeks. Temperatures popped into the hundreds again yesterday in Nebraska. And that's a lot different than, again, what's happening in the Eastern Corn Belt, where yesterday was a fantastic day with highs only in the 70s and 80s. So there is this divide that's in place. Now, everybody is going to see some rain over the next 2 weeks, and that is going to stabilize at least topsoil moisture. But as we noted, we need a lot of rain. Even if we get that 2 inches of rain, June is still going to end up being among the driest on record. It also was pretty dry in April and May, and that's why we're starting to see the cumulative effects of some of this. Now, of course, corn and soybean yields are primarily driven by what happens a little bit further out into the future, say 2 to 12 weeks from now, or maybe 2 to 10 weeks from now, because we're already in the middle of June. So we'll have to wait and see how that whole scenario pans out. But at least in the near term, things do look a little bit better, but it really needs to happen. We can't have this whole scenario be a bust and then suddenly turn hot and dry again in July and expect to get out of this situation. Now, of course, at this moment in time, it doesn't look all that threatening because of the forecast, but it still is just a forecast.
I'll ask about the longer-term forecast in just a bit and remind folks that up on our webpage at willag.org right now, there's an article from Emerson Nafziger detailing some of the Illinois crop. He says it's in pretty good condition, and in the short term, the time I want you to talk about, if we could get some rain, that it could be at full yield potential. You said there are three different cold fronts coming through. Can you detail for me just a bit what those look like and where they're most likely to put rainfall down?
Oh, certainly. That sounds great. I mean, the first one is going to move through tonight and tomorrow. And we should see a pretty strong thunderstorm cluster develop in northeast Iowa, southern Wisconsin, and northern Illinois later on today and especially tonight. And we will see some heavy totals with that one right along the Illinois-Wisconsin border the way it looks now. That same cluster will quickly weaken tomorrow morning, but then we should see some storms redevelop tomorrow afternoon across a wider area of Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio. So that's kind of the first event. It takes place over the next 24 to 36 hours. We have another front that moves through on Sunday and Monday, and that's going to be a fairly strong cold front. Now, typically at this time of the year, you don't see a lot of heavy rain along strong cold fronts. You do see scattered thunderstorms, and some of those would probably be severe just because of the time of the year. But you typically don't see widespread and heavy rains with that type of scenario. So that's early next week. Once we get about 7 to 10 days from now, there's another front that's going to move through. There's a lot of uncertainty with that one because we'll have a cool air mass in place to start the week, and a cool air mass doesn't typically lead to a lot of rain. A warmer air mass will try to move on in over the second half of next week, but that's still pretty far out, and there's a lot of unknown details that we just can't resolve at this point in time. So more than likely what would happen, you'll see more scattered thunderstorms over the second half of next week. By the time you add all of this up, we'd feel pretty comfortable saying that everybody gets 1 to 2 inches of rain. So between all these three events over the next 10 days. And that certainly, again, will alleviate some of the dryness. But will it totally wipe it out? No. And will we need rain to follow in July? Yes. And that's where we're not really sure how the month of July is going to look.
And Emerson in that same article says that corn planted on or near the beginning of April is likely to be pollinating given the growing degree day accumulations in the last week of June. That on May 1st or thereabouts, around the second week of July. Do we know anything about that month yet or very much?
Well, it's still beyond the forecast horizon, so there's not a lot that we can say with confidence about that period. The only thing we can note is that computer models are showing a whole lot of different scenarios at that point in time. And when you see a whole lot of different scenarios 2 weeks out, you just have to kind of take a step back and say, look, it's really hard to say what's going to happen, and I don't have much confidence in it. From a probability standpoint, if you look at historically what we've been going through and what typically happens and the type of fading La Nina that we're still dealing with, La Nina has, of course, ended, but we're now in the neutral phase, and we've seen three other years that were similar to this one in that regard, and those were 1996, 2001, and 2012. We've been talking a little bit about 2012 already. So, of course, the big concern is that we're in the 2012 scenario again. But the forecast, at least at this point in time, is much different than what it would have looked like 9 years ago today. 1996, this year hasn't been matching that one very well. That year was a lot cooler to start and had a very late planting season. And then 2001, also, this one's a little more similar to that, but it's actually most similar by far to 2012. And that's a little bit of the reason we do have some concerns. But the interesting thing to keep in mind is that of those 3 years, none of them yielded higher than the trend that the USDA is using. The USDA is showing the U.S. corn crop at 179.5 bushels per acre, and that's 2.6 bushels per acre above the trend. All three of those years were below that. For soybeans, it's a little bit different, with yields having been fairly close to that 50.8 number relative to trend in 1996 and 2001, even a little bit above it. And then, of course, 2012 was a lot below it, so a little less confidence there. But all those summers were near to drier than normal in the months of July and August, with August having been drier than normal in all three of them. So there still is some risk out here that we're going to end up moving drier regardless of what happens over the next 2 weeks.
Hey, thank you. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, and Todd, these are the kinds of things that we talk about with our subscribers. So sometimes people call us and they say, hey, we really like that information. Just sign up for a trial, and maybe this is something you might like, because you'll be hearing about it more in real time as opposed to once a week with you.
That's one way of doing it. Hey, thank you, Mike. Mike Tenoris with T-Storm Weather in Chicago. If you'd like to sign up, you can visit his website. The address there is tstorm.net, all one word, tstorm.net. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.